Hello, and welcome to On the Other Hand, a podcast that explores politics and other issues of importance to Arkansans through conversations with community leaders in Arkansas. I'm your host, Glenn White, and for today's conversation, April Chatham Carpenter, who usually co-hosts with me, she's sitting this one out, but she'll be back with our next guest. In this podcast, our goal is to serve as a venue for honest but civil conversations about a variety of topics with community leaders of diverse perspectives. Ultimately, what we want to do is to help reduce political polarization in Arkansas. On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas, part of a national organization that aims to reduce political polarization, to help people discover common ground, and to promote a more respectful and productive exchange of perspectives among participants in our democracy. Here at On the Other Hand, we believe that progress in our community and country happens when we listen respectfully to each other and are willing to work with each other when needed so that problem solving can occur and our citizens have hope of a more functional government. My guest today is Jerry Henderson. Jerry's a retired psychologist like myself. He's reviewed a lot of the research and thinking related to political polarization. So today, Jerry and I will be sharing our understandings and thoughts about what research and opinion leaders have to say about what influences polarization. We'll look at what its impacts are and what are some of the best options for moving toward depolarization. Now, I'll tell you, this is a pretty complex and wide-ranging topic to explore, but we're going to do our best to give you a sense of what the social sciences and the experts are thinking about these days when it comes to political polarization. By the way, I want to give proper recognition of Jerry's, or should I say Dr. Henderson's, credentials. When we started this podcast, one thing April and I agreed on was that we would just avoid use of the doctor label. April, Jerry, and I, and some of our guests all have doctorate degrees, but we're not in an academic or professional setting. Otherwise, we might be referred to as Dr. So-and-so. But given the focus of this podcast, we're sticking with first names. Still, I did want to recognize Jerry's and my credentials, primarily because we are both trained as social scientists, and that might help lend some credibility for what we have to say on this topic. So, enough of that. Let's start with this conversation. Jerry, welcome to On the Other Hand, and I appreciate you being here and helping us explore political polarization.
Well, Glenn, I'm glad to be here. And I think most Americans are troubled, even alarmed, by the current level of polarization. So I'm reassured by organizations like Braver Angels that are working hard to alert Americans about the dangers of polarization, along with helping us to find ways of rising above partisan animosity and finding common ground that all Americans share.
Very good. Well, I tell you what, before we get into the meat of the topic, let's start by having you just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the whole polarization topic.
Sure. I joined Braver Angels back in 2018, and I have a great deal of respect for the goals and actions of the organization. And I have become particularly concerned about the negative impact of polarization on the health of democracies around the world. According to Freedom House, democracies globally flourished from the 1980s to the early 2000s. However, and this is concerning, since 2005, civil liberties and democratic principles have steadily declined, and this pattern has been linked to severe polarization.
Okay, so you're talking about the level of polarization pretty much not just in this country, but around the world. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, particularly with respect to democracy.
Okay.
And it's
okay, so the democracy is really more heavily impaired by high levels of polarization, it sounds like.
Absolutely. I mean, you know also that the research pinpoints that pretty well.
Yeah, from what I've seen, it does bear that out. Okay, well, as you know, here in Braver Angels, we talk about colors, red for someone who is leaning conservative or Republican, and blue for someone who leans toward liberal or democratic values. And, of course, we use purple for various combinations, and I suppose we could throw green in there for that option. So can you tell us a little bit about your general political leaning in terms of what color would you call yourself?
Well, I think ideologically, I'm probably bluish purple on most policy issues. I view myself as a moderate, and I'm becoming more uncomfortable with the rhetoric coming from both the far left and the far right. Also, like many Americans, I'm frustrated with the partisan grandstanding and gridlock in Congress.
Yeah, that is a big problem with polarization and something that Braver Angels hopes to do something about, but we kind of do that one person at a time. So you said you're kind of a bluish purple. Tell us a story, if you can, or maybe describe your values to help us understand how you got to that political leaning, to that color.
Oh, okay. Well, I grew up in Arkansas, and I attended Central High School, which, of course, had a history of significant racial tension. I was on the track team at Central, and one of my teammates happened to be African-American. In addition to being thoughtful and kind, he was one of the most intelligent people in the entire school, certainly including myself. And, you know, I was struck by how getting to know another human being was of such great use in throwing out prejudice and stereotypes. Perhaps also my training in psychology naturally led, hopefully, to a sensitivity for human suffering. It's troubling for me to think of a mother living somewhere in Little Rock with a sick child that is having difficulty accessing affordable health care. So I really admit that I'm pro-universal health care.
Okay, I understand that. That's interesting. You said something about, you know, when you're in high school and your track, the person on the track team, that it helped you to get to know him as a person, and it certainly helped to cut through any potential prejudice and stereotypes. And I think one of the previous programs we talked about that there's a strong indication, not only with political polarization, but especially in other areas like mental health stigma, where when you don't know someone, you can easily form stereotypes about them if you have some lack of knowledge of them and have some reason to have maybe some discomfort or suspicion. But that tends to melt away in most cases when you get to know people personally. So one of the best things we can do to combat polarization, and I'm skipping ahead a little bit here, but is just to develop positive relationships and get to know people. And that's one of the things we try to do in Braver Angels.
Absolutely. I mean, this was a wonderful human being I'm talking about, and it was just easy to let go of those stereotypes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Good. So in terms of Braver Angels, you know a little bit about what we're doing, obviously. Can you give me some idea of what common ground that you share with the Braver Angels approach and philosophy?
Sure. Okay. Again, I have great respect for the organization and the basic principle, as we were just talking about, establishing relationships across the political divide. As individuals, I think we can all help by having the courage to challenge our own negative biases and stereotypes. And while this can be quite difficult, we can also develop or try to a habit of respectfully reminding members of our own party that we are all Americans and we do share common values.
Okay, very good. You know, most people hear about Braver Angels when I talk about that, and they think, well, that sounds really good. But there are some people who don't necessarily buy into what we're doing, particularly people who have a pretty strong kind of win-lose approach to things. They feel like anything that gives any credence at all to the other side is not good. And there are other concerns people may have. I wonder if you have any concerns or questions yourself about what you know about the Braver Angels approach.
Actually, very few. I mean, historically, Braver Angels has focused on individuals and, you know, helping them develop effective skills, communication skills, across the partisan divide. And while they also work with politicians and political organizations, and this is not really a problem with Better Angels, but I fear that the vitriol coming from political leaders, which of course is amplified by the media, creates very powerful headwinds for a grassroots approach. And I'm probably not alone in wishing political leaders would actually lead rather than pouring gasoline on the fire of our divisions. So.
Yeah, and I find that most people who are attracted to Braver Angels have a similar concern and desire to see things tamped down a little bit in the public dialogue. Yeah, we'll actually get to some things about that later, I think, as we get into the research on polarization. So, Jerry, tell me how you, in your own life, personally do things to help have respectful interactions across the political divide.
Well, as you and I know, it's a sad situation, but politics has become so entangled with distrust and moral outrage that it can be quite difficult to successfully have a meaningful conversation. I really do think that humility and the general attitude of respect are crucial. Also, it helps to focus on seeking genuine understanding of the other person's feelings and values so that you can keep searching for common ground, and that rather than trying to convince them that our own opinions are right. That goes downhill pretty quick. Mm-hmm. One thing for sure, it's counterproductive if we slip into an argument and end up believing, I just can't talk to those people. That's so counterproductive. So humility, curiosity, and respect are crucial for approaching political conversations.
Sounds right to me. You know, it's interesting when I hear that, I'm reminded, how many times did you hear messages like that growing up from the adults who were trying to raise you, right?
Too many.
Or maybe not enough the way things are going.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, Jerry, then tell me this. This could be a toughie, but I wonder how you see Arkansas and America going in terms of politics. You know, where might the future take us? And before you answer, just understand that I'd like to make sure that we have some positives as well as some more realistic elements, because clearly there's plenty of things to be troubled by right now, but I hope there are some positives you can find as well. And so if you can talk both about your hopes and about any concerns you have about where we seem to be headed in the state and country.
Sure. Well, you know, we're a southern state, and we're tracking the southern state trends pretty closely. And as I alluded to earlier, I am deeply concerned about the level of distrust and animosity coming from both ends of the political spectrum. However, I do have hope that both citizens and politicians will soon begin to realize that the culture war is taking an intolerable toll on individuals, the effectiveness of Congress, and the very fabric of social cohesion. I also remain hopeful that wiser and more mature politicians will eventually stand up and counter the tribal trends that are dominating politics.
That's interesting. That's well said. It seems kind of ironic you talked about looking for more mature politicians, and I guess we're talking about more psychologically mature rather than age, because we certainly have plenty of aged leaders these days, but that doesn't necessarily guarantee the level of maturity you're talking about, I believe.
You know, and I worry about men seem to have a particular propensity to start beating their chest against the other party, and it's just so counterproductive.
Kind of the old hyper-masculine,
some
people call toxic masculinity.
Right. I mean, I'm all for more women in Congress.
Okay, very good, Jerry. All right, well, I think that's enough for getting to know a little bit about you and where you're coming from. The main thing we're trying to do today is talk about political polarization. We want to explore some of the research, what the social sciences literature has to say from the work that's been done. So let's kind of start with something real basic. Help us understand exactly how you define polarization. What exactly is it?
Well, that's a good question and not a simple one. Social psychologists and political scientists really have a variety of different ways of talking about polarization. And ideological polarization simply refers to the degree of divergent beliefs on broad policy issues, from conservative to liberal, on issues like, say, abortion or affirmative action. They're historically typical conservative and liberal economic and social policy positions, and these tend to remain relatively stable across time. And as you and I have talked before, some level of ideological polarization is actually healthy in that it can ensure a wider range of policies that enrich options for actually solving the problems of a society.
Okay.
Moderate degrees of ideological polarization also, unlike some of the others, present very few harms to individuals or society at large.
So. Yeah, well, that's an important point you're making then. So you talked first about ideological polarization, which, as I understand it, sounds basically like the fact that people have different opinions and those opinions tend to aggregate in particular directions so that you have groups with that share certain types that differ from other groups. Is that basically it?
Yeah, and there's been times in American history that there's been, a good deal of ideological polarization without the other more severe types being on the scene, and it didn't cause the kind of acrimony we're currently faced with.
Okay, and I know we'll get to that, but to highlight something you said, you're talking about the fact that it's not necessarily a bad thing to have some degree of polarization if it doesn't reach these bad levels. And I think there are other areas of the social sciences literature that bear that out. I'm thinking in particular about the research that's been done for a long time, for many years, even decades, about group decision-making. I can think back in the 70s, they talked about groupthink. But the notion there was that groups can get into decision-making and wind up having really bad decisions that they make, bad outcome from their group process. And the research, some of the research at least that I've heard about, shows that when a group is rather homogenous, that is, when it's made up of similar individuals who have similar information, similar areas of expertise, and, and think alike, they may be the experts in their field, but they actually many times don't make such good decisions, and sometimes the better decisions are made by groups who have diverse membership. Maybe they have some experts in there, but they have other people who are not experts at all on a subject matter, but they have other complementary skills and knowledge base, and so those more diverse groups tend to wind up making better decisions than the other kind. So it sounds like that underlies or kind of emphasizes what you're saying about ideological polarization. By itself, having different opinions is not a bad thing for society.
Absolutely. And it would be wonderful to think currently of a Republican senator going across the aisle and say, well, I need to discuss this with you as a Democrat. It happens, but rarely seems.
Yeah. It used to happen a lot more, I know that.
Absolutely,
you and I are old
yeah.
enough to remember.
Well, you know that there's in Congress, there's a problem-solving caucus that mm-hmm. does have an equal number of Republicans and Democrats, and they are the few moderates in Congress these days, it seems.
I had forgotten about that, Jerry. That's true. They do have that. It's funny, though, you never hear from them, do you? And maybe it's not because – I don't know if it's because they're not doing anything, but – that kind of stuff doesn't sell. It doesn't get people interested at the media level of like, oh, let's hear what the peacemakers are saying and doing.
Well, it's also, that points out the responsibility of we as voters. If we keep putting, these grandstanding cultural warriors up in Congress, what do we expect to happen in terms of polarization? So. Okay. We bear responsibility on that as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. So you're saying it ultimately comes down to the voters, who we vote for as a
nation. Put them there.
That's hard to argue with that. Okay. Well, let's talk about another time. I know you said ideological polarization by itself is basically not a bad thing necessarily.
Pretty,
what else?
Pretty benign, yeah. Okay. Well, in the research literature, the term affective polarization is also used, and as you might guess, it refers to a more emotional and problematic level of polarization in which there is development of considerable animosity and distrust between the parties. And at this level, there is usually some loss of civility and increased emotional tension, both in the public and in the political bodies. So.
Okay, so that's the getting closer to what I think we're seeing now, right?
I think we may have surpassed that one to the next one I can talk about.
Okay, well, tell us about the next one.
Okay, the next one is a term used called toxic polarization. It describes severe polarization that tends to divide societies into mutually distrustful us versus them camps. And at this level, partisan politics becomes imbued with emotionality, and citizens begin to strongly identify and become loyal to one party or the other. And this is a problem. Few moderates remain, as citizens often feel, and politicians too, pressure to join one side or the other of this us-them divide. And politicians become increasingly unwilling to compromise, and political gridlock results, which diminishes governmental bodies' effectiveness in addressing policy problems. And the level of polarization threatens the health of a nation's democracy.
Yeah, that does sound like kind of what we're experiencing nowadays.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Okay. You know, it's kind of funny but sad at the same time. When you talk about the us versus them and the strong identity and emotionality, kind of reminds me of divides such as the hogs versus the horns or things like that.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen also that political scientists sometimes talk about, you know, the competitive team sports. Jack that up a little bit and you've got politics, you know.
Oh, my. Okay. Interesting thought. Okay. Tell us a little bit, if you can, about kind of the history. How is it that polarization got so out of hand in this country? Or has it always been this way? What's the situation there?
It's the million-dollar question, Glenn. Well, historically, polarization in America has fluctuated within certain bounds, and the constitutional norms have provided a certain type of equilibrium. Of course, there was extreme and devastating period of polarization leading up to the Civil War. And in contrast, for almost two decades following World War II, there was a period of unique levels of bipartisanship in the U.S. Congress. Norms of civility and across the aisle camaraderie flourished. Actually, it's somewhat hard to believe given the current circumstances, but most politicians were considered moderate, and there were liberals and conservatives in both parties. It's ironic that political scientists during these times were actually complaining about the lack of sufficient ideological polarization. It's hard not to be a bit nostalgic, me personally, for those political times. And how refreshing would it be to see that kind of civility in Congress today?
I mean, I know. I've lived through it. We were a similar age, and I lived through the same thing. In fact, as you were talking about that, one thought that came to me was, you talked about the Civil War being the extreme polarization. Now, some people might say, and I might have been inclined to say at first, that the 60s were a time of intense polarization. But there was certainly a lot of societal differences and unrest. But one thing I do remember, that at the governmental level, you still had, like you said, moderates in both parties. You had liberals and conservatives in both parties. And you had more willingness to reach across the aisle in some areas. So even though there were some knockdown, drag-out political disputes back then, they still had that other capacity that we are not seeing today.
Yeah, I agree. And some of the polarization back then was between younger people and older people.
Good point. The generation gap.
Yeah.
Google that one, young folks.
Really.
Okay.
So by the 1970s, the political map in the United States had begun to change. There was a decline in moderate to liberal Republicans and also conservative Democrats. So in essence, congressional parties have continued to sort themselves both ideologically and geographically for almost four decades.
That fits with what I remember, too. You know,
yeah.
Some people, you know, different places on the spectrum in both parties, but you really don't see that now, do you?
Boy, can you imagine a liberal Republican getting elected?
No.
Or an extremely conservative Democrat.
That's true. No.
Yeah.
You're right.
Polarization as we know it today probably has its roots in the 1990s. It was a period in which there was a sharp uptick in negative partisanship. Some think this was in part related to the hardball tactics of the House Speaker at the time, Newt Gingrich. And there were other polarizing events in the 90s, such as the Clinton impeachment, and it was also the decade of the founding of both Fox News and MSNBC. So this was a period of, you could almost say, a convergence of factors that began heating up polarization forward. So,
I remember that time as well. And yeah, when you talk about Fox News and MSNBC, those are polar opposites in the media, and you didn't see that back before.
Walter Cronkite didn't talk like that.
Yeah, Walter Cronkite has reached iconic status in the culture, hasn't he?
He really deserves it.
Yeah, I think you're right. So what happens after that?
Well, polarization intensified in the 90s, and there was unfortunately a reduction of social interactions between the parties. Fewer and fewer people in Congress lived in Washington, and there was a decline in development of trust and cooperative relationships across the aisle. And these stages, again, unfortunately, set the stage for more stereotyping and less overall civility across party lines.
And you know, that reminds me, again, I'd mentioned earlier about the idea that when you're around people and you get to know them as a person and as an individual, it tends to erode some of the distrust and the stereotypes. So, you know, the fact that everybody started going home to their home states, you might think that's good for taking care of your constituents, and yet it drove people apart and they didn't have the kind of social salve, if you will, of being around other people.
And congressmen's children didn't know the other congressmen's children. I mean, when you start getting those kinds of relationship, your family does something with the other across the aisle family. That matters.
And it kind of forces you to be civil when you're there, the parents are there with their kids. Very good point, Jerry.
Well, as polarization has continued to increase, there's been an unhealthy drop in the number of moderates, as we discussed a little bit earlier, as most politicians have moved further to the far right and far left. And as we have observed, this has created diminished willingness to compromise. And so this is kind of starting down that problematic path of creating polarization that starts causing problems in a society. So.
And it sounds like part of the problem is that because people are so separated in their ideological beliefs and their policy stances that you can't get much done. You have to have particularly in our government the way it is now, like in the Senate, you have to have, in essence, a filibuster-proof majority of at least 60 votes, and that's hard to do in a divided nation. And so it sounds like unless it's something that's just a no-brainer that everybody agrees with, it's not much gets agreed to, and so you don't get laws passed that might otherwise help solve some problems.
Yeah, so in essence, everybody loses.
Right. So that kind of governing really isn't in the best interest of either of the parties or the citizens at large. Well, we'll end for now on that sobering note, but take heart, listeners. We'll soon be exploring some various ways of combating extreme polarization that will include some specific skills that each of us can learn and use in our everyday interactions with others. So be sure to join us for the next episode. Thanks to our listeners for joining us for this edition of On the Other Hand. We hope you enjoyed this part of our discussion on polarization with Jerry Henderson. Be sure to check out the rest of our conversation and future podcast episodes of On the Other Hand on the Braver Angels Arkansas website. That address is arkansas.braverangels.org, and you just go to the podcast page from there. We'd like to hear from our listeners. We'd like to know what feedback you have for us, what you like about our program, any suggestions you have for improvement, especially any ideas for speakers or topics that you'd like to see us cover. But basically, whatever you want to share with us, all you got to do is just email it to us. So if you go to the Braver Angels Arkansas website, on the podcast page, you will find a link to send us a Gmail, and that email address is otherhandar, no spaces, at gmail.com. That's otherhandar at gmail.com. On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band, Dr. Richard Main, conductor. From your host, Glenn White, have a good evening, and let's keep the conversation going as we work to bring our community closer together.